This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful hump day, a Wednesday. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. All right, so we're about to talk about a hostage situation this hour. We're also going to get to Brandon Darby. There's cartel news. Mexico's handing over 27 Mexican cartel guys. Darby's going to come up about a half hour from now, talk to us about that. But let's talk about the hostage situation that's going on in America. And that hostage situation is, well, Trump talked about it.
They really are. They're stuck. They don't know what to do. They have probably more, I would say more than half are sane, but they are led by insane people.
He's talking about the Democrat Party. They're stuck. I am curious about this. And the thing is, I'm about to talk about something that I don't know about, and neither do you. I'm about to talk about something nobody knows about. How many American Democrats know they're in the midst of insanity, want the insanity to stop, but don't feel comfortable speaking out? Because listen, they're not comfortable speaking out. It's a cult. It's a religion. It's a cult. Cult members who speak out against the cult leader get treated horribly. I know people think I get a lot of hate mail and death threats, and of course that's true. You know, the communists hate me. You know who gets treated way worse than I do? Way worse. I've openly declared myself to be the mortal enemy of communists. I am an anti-communist. That is who I am. I believe in fighting and destroying communism until the day I die. If you are a communist listening to my show, I despise you as much as you despise me, and I'm going to try to destroy your sick, demonic worldview. Now, I've openly declared that. Former Democrats get treated way worse than I do. Way worse. A Democrat who breaks away from the cult, who chooses to leave the religion, isn't just an enemy. He's a traitor. And Democrats know this. Democrat politicians and normie Democrats know this. Let's set aside the politicians, because I have lived in a Democrat world a few different times in my life. The biggest one is when I lived in Washington, D.C. for a year, because everybody there is a friggin' Democrat, which we're going to get to in a couple minutes. Everybody there is a Democrat. So I would get invited out with friends. I had a few friends there. Ob and I would get invited out on a Friday or a Saturday. Hey, we're having some chicken wings and watching the game, something like that. Well, at these parties, at these meetups, there were mostly Democrats there. Oftentimes, it was Democrats there. And you can tell there is a fear, a palpable fear they have at speaking against the cult in front of their friends. It is a palpable fear for them. They don't want to be piled on. They don't want to be torn apart. They frankly feel a little bit traitorous and dirty speaking out against the club, speaking out against the religion, so they don't do it. How many of them are there? If you live in Washington, D.C., for instance, which I know you don't, but if you live in Washington, D.C., or you visit Washington, D.C., my son visited with his friends last year at the Lincoln Memorial. Some violent meth heads started screaming violent threats at them. Now, granted, because my son's an idiot and all of his friends are too, they started laughing and thought it was hilarious, but you understand what I mean. How many Democrats live in D.C. and they're afraid? Afraid of physical violence. As we've talked about before, that's a different kind of afraid. It really is. That's a whole different kind of fear. When you are afraid of being physically hurt yourself personally, that's a different kind of fear. How many Democrats are scared to walk to the office, walk to the car, don't want to go out after dark? Lots and lots of them. But at the same time, their religion has a devil, and his name is Donald Trump. How many Democrats in that city want the big evil devil to come in and take the scum off the streets? They just don't feel comfortable saying
it. I will just go back to the fact that, you know, the people that are cheering this on privately are not like right-wing Republicans. They're not MAGA people. A lot of our friends are in the media, and also Democrats that worked on Joe Biden's campaign, that worked on other campaigns, that are saying, yeah, I'd like to feel safe walking around this city. If the federal government can be a positive partner in keeping the streets safe, while, again, forming a partnership with the D.C. police and not taking over, then at least the people I've spoken with that live in D.C. day in, day out, see this as a positive step.
See it as a positive step. Now, that's Joe Scarborough. That's the stuff his friends are texting him. Hey, this is kind of cool. Hey, I hate Trump. I hate Trump. They'll throw in the qualifier. I really hate Trump. Don't get me wrong. I hate Trump, but sure would be nice to not get stabbed. Now, juxtapose that versus the D.C. Attorney General.
We as a city and a community need to be much more focused on prevention and surrounding young people and their families with resources if we want to be safer in the long run. We cannot prosecute and arrest our way out of it.
That's how you have to talk when you're a Democrat elected leader. Otherwise, you get torn to shreds. How many normie Democrats, or at least not totally insane Democrats, are living like that in not just D.C., various parts of the country? How many are tired of the expense, tired of the taxes, tired of the crime, tired of the illegals, tired of the bilingual schools, tired of all the endless Democrat misery that Democrats have brought onto this country, but they just don't have the courage to break away from the religion? And that is a very common theme in communist countries throughout history. When an evil communist regime takes over, it's not that all of them are masterminds and demons and tearing people apart. So many people putting on that Soviet uniform are disgusted by the Communist Party, but they're afraid. How many Democrats listening to the sound of my voice right now are a little uncomfortable because it's hitting home, isn't it? Maybe you're squirming in your chair. Maybe that's you. I don't expect you, based on my voice, to go to that cocktail party this Friday and say to your friends, well, I mean, maybe it is good to keep murderers in jail. I don't expect you to say that, but you could. Maybe your courage would be contagious, as courage often is. And look, you can hate me all you want, but in a roundabout way, I'm trying to save your party. There is a chance the Democrat Party does a Thelma and Louise and drives right off the cliff. If they don't stop, you can't brand yourself as the pro-murder party, the pro-crime party. You can't say this stuff and keep getting elected. You're going to end up losing places like New York.
We as a city and a community need to be much more focused on prevention and surrounding young people and their families with resources if we want to be safer in the long run. We cannot prosecute and arrest our way out of it.
You've already seen, see, Democrats won't see these signs, but I'm on the outside looking in, so I can see these signs. I know you can see these signs. You've already seen little burps, little bits of pushback with these various recalls, these various little election things, even in Chicago. Look, we love to make fun of this doofus who's the current mayor.
I would just say it like this, that the president has always been intimidated by the intellectual prowess of black men. And so, of course, he would speak in those petite and puerile terms.
Anyway, I know we make fun of Chicago, but they did get rid of their last mayor because people were tired of it. I realize they replaced Lori Lightfoot with an even bigger moron. I understand that, but there are these little signs that people are sick of it. People are sick of it. And yet, the leadership of the Democrat Party is trapped. Name me one national Democrat talking about cracking down on crime. You can't. The pro-crime party. Oops. Speaking of pro-crime, a lot of this stuff goes back to the Black Lives Matter riots. Did your cell phone company fund those? Just a question. Do you have Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile? Why don't you pick up your phone? Why don't you look it up? Why don't you look up where your money went? The animals were funded by corporate America, meaning they were funded by you. My cell phone company didn't. Pure Talk didn't. Pure Talk, they're busy handing out American flags to veterans, taking care of veteran debt, getting them the care they need. My cell phone company is led by a patriot who did two tours in Vietnam. Oh, and my cell phone company charges me half of what you're paying. You can keep your phone, keep your number, or get a brand new one if you're in the market. Dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly. #250, say Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Wednesday with me, Bronco. What, Chris? It's the Jesse Kelly Show. And look, it's been light tonight.
It is as heavy as 10 boxes that you might be moving.
That doesn't make sense with what I just said, but I don't care. Sometimes I don't make sense. Let's do some emails. I said I was going to get to 20. I don't know how many I've gotten to so far, but it's been a lot. It's been a lot, Chris. Jesse, here's a cool story. In 2000, my step-grandfather was the oldest living son of a Civil War vet. He was 79 at the time that Southern Living Magazine did an interview with him. That's so cool. His dad was 78 when Grandpa was born. He was a Confederate veteran, captured during the battle in 1863, thrown in a Union POW camp in Chicago. I forgot the name of the camp. It was just as terrible as Andersonville, swampy and disease-ridden. He talked about the only food they got was a boiled broth once a day. They caught rats and would cook them to eat. That's freaking cool. Anyway, he said they were almost dead by the end of the war. My step-grandpa was a very unique man. In his late 70s, he had three different younger girlfriends that were in their 40s and 50s. He had a date for every meal. He would joke about hiring and firing them. His name was Wiley Denny. I always enjoyed listening to the stories of these elderly men. My grandpa's uncles and dad were all veterans from World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. They have all passed away now. These men were treasures, and they were greatly missed. I wanted to read that, one, because it's cool, and two, I don't want to get sappy, but it is sad that we're losing our old-timers. And I know that's how life goes, and they would tell you that, too. I get that, but there aren't many World War II veterans left. And right on their heels, the Korean War guys are fading fast. The Korean War guys. And I can't believe I'm going to say this, but we're probably, what, 15 years away from losing our Vietnam guys? Sucks. I guess that's how it goes. Jesse, my wife and I just returned from our honeymoon in Portugal. That's sweet. While we were there, we went on a private tour with a man from Dubai. When he learned that my wife is originally from Mexico, he heard Mexico was the gateway to the United States. Oh, my gosh. I tried to play it off and told him we didn't know about all that because we did things the right way. My wife was here on a tourist visa when we met. She probably looked him right in the eyes and said,
Buenas tardes.
Fell in love, spent years getting her through the citizen process. He wouldn't drop the subject, though, and kept asking about the details of the process. He even said he was working with a company back in Dubai to find him a wife in the United States. I think the cherry on top was later in the day when he complained about the Ukrainian immigrants coming to Portugal and driving up the real estate market. His name is Matt. Look, it's a good thing. Let's focus on something positive about all this. It's a good thing that we live in a country everyone wants to go to. Isn't that cool? Let's be happy about that. We, you and me, I guess we have a bunch of international people listening too, but you and me, Americans, we live in the place everyone wants to visit. We're members of the club. Everyone wants in. And we're already here. That is cool, right, Chris? It's kind of cool. It makes me feel good when I think about that. Nobody's trying to get into some dump like Italy. No, I'm kidding. But nobody's trying to get into Rwanda, right? There's not a line. There's not a line to get into Yemen. No one wants to go there. Right? Nobody. We live in a place where people want to come. Now, it is sad and incredibly aggravating that our politicians, I would love to say just Democrats, but we have James Lankford type Republicans, that our politicians will routinely make public statements that encourage people to try to get in by any means necessary. That's horrible. The best border security is the rhetoric of the people who lead the country because everyone around the world listens. What do you think that dude in Dubai thinks about Donald Trump versus Joe Biden? You think that dude in Dubai right now, because of the headlines, because of the speeches, do you think he's going to try to get into this country illegally? Not a chance. It's not worth the trouble. It's not worth the risk. It's not worth it at all. Why even bother? But under Joe Biden, when the communists were running things, why wouldn't you try? They created an app so you can schedule your invasion. It's amazing to me. Amazing to me. Jesse, what's your insider info regarding the Mar-a-Lago FBI raid? Was it so frantic because the FBI rats were searching for the information that was discovered and exposed by Tulsi Gabbard? Could be. I've heard a lot of that the Mar-a-Lago raid was so they could find and seize the documents Trump had that proved those dirty rats were colluding behind his back during his presidency. I've heard that, and that certainly could be. And that's part of it, probably. But here's what I know was part of it. They got afraid. In fact, we're going to touch on that as soon as I'm done with Darby. If we can get a hold of him, his cell phone is garbage right now. But if we can get a hold of Darby, then I'll talk to Darby next. If not, then we'll do this next. We'll talk about them being afraid. And that being why they acted the way they acted. Now, what is it that is making them so afraid? It's the loss of control. The loss of control. And I don't just mean control of the government. They are losing control of the people themselves. In fact, if you're to study the trends, it looks like they flat out lost it. It probably never coming back. And they're scared to death. We'll talk about that next.
The Jesse Kelly Show. On air and online at jessekellyshow.com.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Wednesday, a hump day. And it's always fantastic when Brandon Darby of the Breitbart Cartel Chronicles, big cheese editor over there, joins us to educate us on several things. Okay, Brandon, they're handing over 26 cartel leaders. Mexico is. What is this?
Am I supposed to call you Jesse or Bronco?
Bronco, please. Let's stick with Bronco please.
I'll call you Bronco, Jesse. Bronco, thanks, Jesse. Buddy.
Thanks.
No, when you did that, there's a guy on Twitter named Gay Patriot, And so yeah. I got CC at Gay Patriot just because Gay's in his name.
That's wrong.
No, okay.
That's wrong.
Okay, to the seriousness, here's what just happened, okay? This is the second time that the Mexican government has handed over these big dogs in various cartels, right? The first time they handed over big dogs in a bunch of cartels in the Sinaloa cartel. But keep in mind that the main cartel, this guy El Mencho, it's the Cartel Jalisco, right? CJNG, that's the names of them. Their current Secretary of Defense has very close relationships with Mencho, right? They're very close. He is the one that is controlling the black markets in Mexico. That is the dominant cartel in Mexico, Cartel Jalisco, right? So they hand over all of these people. The first time Trump starts to threaten the government with tariffs, they hand over a bunch of people, one of whom had you know, brutally killed a DEA agent named Kiki Camarena in the 80s. It took that long for them to give us that guy, right? They literally let this guy, like, stay in Mexico. They let him out of prison. He started running a cartel again, and they put him back in prison of sorts, but he had this wonderful life, and they finally handed him over after 3 decades, right? Because of Trump. Otherwise, that family of that DEA agent never would have had justice if it weren't for what Trump did and threatening Mexico. So they hand over these people. They're like, see, we're helping you, and we're going to cooperate with you. But what they did was they only cooperated, really, any big cooperation was against all of Mencho and Cartel Jalisco's enemies. So really what they did was they had the USA help them help their cartel buddy and take out all of his enemies. So he kept taking over more and more in Mexico. So the Trump administration wises up and says, hey, you're not going to do this to us. So then they say, we're going to hit you with more tariffs and we're going to authorize U.S. military action in Mexico. And all of a sudden, Mexico's government says, oh, here are these 26 more top Sinaloa and Jalisco cartel operators. But all the while, they will not give us and they will not go after the leader of Cartel Jalisco, who is paying many people in the leadership of Mexico. Do you see how this works? Do you see this game that's being played? Awesome that they handed these people over. Not awesome that they won't go after El Mencho. We can find Mencho. I promise you the U.S. government has plenty of information as to where he is. But Mexico's protecting him. Anytime there's a chance to get him, somebody tips him off the day before, you know, in the Mexican government, because we have to cooperate with the cartel connected government of Mexico. And that's what this is about. This is them saying, hey, we're doing something. We're showing you some action. Please don't try to start doing unilateral military action in our country, because if you do, there's really not a darn thing we can do about it.
Okay. So again, we're speaking with Brandon Darby, Breitbart. This is exactly why I wanted to have him on, because I was curious. I see the headline and immediately I'm curious. Brandon, before we get to other parts of what you just said, why not give this guy up? I know you've said before he is friends, I guess personal friends with, I guess, their Secretary of Defense or something like that. But is it fear? Is it friendship? No. Is it just simple bribery?
Money. It's money. It's money. Everything is for sale in Mexico. So that is really good if you're a bad guy. And you can buy your way out of justice. But if somebody comes in with a larger economic incentive, then they can buy justice for you and get you incarcerated. See how this works?
Mm-hmm.
And everything is for sale in Mexico. It's the most complicated thing you've ever seen. If you try to do any business dealing in Mexico, this is how it goes down. You start doing it. It looks like it's going to work. And then at the last minute, they go, well, there's this one guy and he wants, you know, $20,000 or he can't, you know, he can stop it. And so you're like, okay, all right, $20,000. All right. Yes, he can be in the deal for $20,000. No problem. And then it moves a little further. And then just on the last day, you think you're closing the deal. And they go, well, there's this guy really doesn't want this to go through. But there's this other guy who's his advisor. And he says that if we hire him as an advisor for $100,000, you know, and you're like, oh, my gosh, you know, like this is the most insane thing you've ever seen. It's how business works in Mexico. It's how it works, you know, and this is how it works on the highest levels as well. So, again, they're still protecting El Mencho. They're still protecting Cartel Jalisco. They're still acting like they're helping us fight cartels while they, for the most part, only go after the enemies of El Mencho. So we're clearing his path, right? And the Trump administration is starting to have enough of it. And they're like, all right, let's up the ante. We're gonna authorize unilateral military action. And we're going to hit you with more tariffs because you're not doing enough. So they say, okay, here's a little more. And then we're going to come back again and say, you're not doing enough. And they're going to say, here's a little more. And they're going to draw this out to where Trump is no longer in office. Whoever's in there next does not care about this issue. They're just going to say they care about it like Democrats and Republicans have for decades, right? And they're not, that's what they're waiting it out. That's what he's doing. He's very intelligent. Very smart, knows what he's doing, and he is paying everyone and waiting this out, waiting this administration out. However, it is also good that we are getting these people, but mind you not, none of these people, not the first tranche and not this tranche, none of these cartel operators and leaders would be facing U.S. justice for what they've done to our communities if it were not for Trump threatening tariffs and threatening military action. And do not forget that fact. Do not let that slip off your brain. Anyone listening?
Speaking with Brandon Darby, Breitbart, I have so many more questions now based off of these other things. Let me just ask this really briefly, Brandon, before I go to break and then attempt to strangle you to keep you here for one more segment. This El Mencho guy, you've mentioned Mencho several times. What's his background? Where'd he come from?
Well, okay, so Cartel Jalisco was part of the Sinaloa Federation. I've talked about this on the show before, not this particular, but the concept. The Sinaloa cartel is really a federation, right? It's really a bunch of different criminal groups who are all, you know, they agree to be under the banner of the Sinaloa cartel, okay? But Mencho decided, he was a leader in Jalisco, he decided that he was going to start his own cartel. He was going to break his cartel away from the Sinaloa Federation, and that started a war between Cartel Jalisco now and the rest of the Sinaloa Federation. You know, the U.S. government, with the help of the Mexican government, has taken out several of the Sinaloa leadership. So now the Sinaloa cartel, the Sinaloa Federation, is a bunch of groups fighting each other, right? And they have very limited federal power any longer. Some of them still have a lot of power, but it's going to be waning as years go by, right? For sure, because we've done the same thing that we did to the Gulf Cartel, which is we decapitated them so many times that now they're really a bunch of glorified gangbangers operating under the banner of the Gulf Cartel. But really, there's just a bunch of, you know, there's probably 10 different leaders of the Gulf Cartel, right? You know, these different factions oftentimes are fighting each other. So, and it's much easier to deal with that than it is to deal with an El Mencho or a Sinaloa cartel when it was in its heyday, because they have access to control in the federal government, right? So when you deal with the Gulf Cartel now, they have regional, they might have some municipal employees or workers, they have some journalists, they have some people in the state government, but not as many, not the governor any longer, right? They don't have the kind of power, and that's because of the decapitation approach. And that's what's happening with the Sinaloa. But so Mencho broke away and said, hey, my criminal group is now Cartel Jalisco, and it's no longer under your leadership. And from now on, I make all the money. And I'm going to be so brutal that all of you are going to be afraid to mess with me. And that's kind of what's happened.
He is Brandon Darby. Brandon, you have just time for a couple more questions after the break?
I'd love to. I have a cup of coffee. I'm chilling. I'm all about it.
Perfect. We are going to be right back with Brandon Darby. Before we come back with Brandon Darby, I want to remind you that $9 is what it would cost you to take that home movie, that VHS tape, the Super 8 film, $9, and you can have it digitized and on your phone. You can look at it on your phone. You can look at it on your computer. You could have it on the cloud if you want it physically. You can have it on a thumb drive. $9 to preserve that memory forever. Legacy Box is running a big sale. You know they'll hand digitize all your hard copy of pictures, and you. I hope you've already done that. For $9 a tape, it's time to get in on the video game. $9 a tape. Go to legacybox.com/Jesse. Legacybox.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Oracle.
You're gonna love this one. It's a scream, baby.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is The Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Wednesday. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. We are back with Brandon Darby of the great Breitbart Cartel Chronicles. Brandon, okay, you mentioned the Sinaloa Federation and how we continue to take out the heads of this. How significant was the taking out of El Chapo to the disintegration, the slow disintegration of the Sinaloa Federation? I don't know El Chapo. Was he some unbelievable seminal figure, or was he just another guy?
He was an unbelievable seminal figure. He it's a big deal. You know, I would say at this point, it's a big deal to do, but again, we have to understand the context. The context is another guy sprung up, another guy started paying more people and politicking better, and then the Mexican government was willing to go after their former boy because everything is for sale, right? And he did the job better. He did the politicking and the bribing better. And so then the Mexican government was willing to go after him. Now we're at a point where we can't play two people off of each other because there's no one as powerful as El Mencho any longer, right? So there's no one that powerful. So we can't take that approach. So yes, that was a lovely approach. At the time, under the specific circumstances, getting El Chapo here was a big deal. Getting his son here was a big deal. Getting, you know, there's a lot of these big deals that are happening, but they're still protecting the biggest cartel figure in Mexico. And El Chapo, make no mistake, Mexico would not have gone after El Chapo and helped us go after El Chapo were they not doing the bidding of El Chapo's rival. Get it?
Yeah.
So that's where we are. That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a fragile nation that's literally listed as a fragile nation, not a failed nation, but a fragile state, right? That is what Mexico is, a fragile narco state. And that is, there are a lot of good people in Mexico, and there are a lot of good people in Mexico's leadership, or trying to be in Mexico's leadership and in Mexico's law enforcement communities. But make no mistake, there are a lot more who are not good when it comes to the leadership of that country, because some of them are in those situations so they can make money. Some of them are in those situations to make a change, and then they're told, you know, you want plata o plomo, like you want silver or lead. We can either make you rich or we can kill you and all of your children and your grandparents and your wife. And so they choose to go the dirty route, because they don't have an FBI to call or a 911 to call. They don't have, if any time they call the government, the cartel knows they did, you know, and a lot of those people in government work for whichever cartel we're dealing with at the time or talking about. So it's a very ugly situation. There's no pretty way out of this. There's, you know, not to tie it into another issue, but it's kind of like dealing with Hamas. Like, there's no pretty way to do it. If that's what if you're going to try to get Hamas, there's no pretty way to do it. There's no nice way to go about this. Okay. and we're in the same situation with Mexico in that regard. It's going to be ugly. There's going to be bloodshed. There's going to be people fighting for control once other people are gone. There's going to be military aircraft shot down as there have been, or, you know, there's going to be drone explosions, and there's going to be all types of things that resemble guerrilla warfare in Mexico. And as there already are, right, people only have to go to Breitbart to read about landmines and the usage of landmines and other IEDs. And this, it's going to be ugly, but we're going to get through the other side. And in the process of that, regardless of your opinions on the drug war, there's going to be a lot less illicit fentanyl, right, killing the people who are the most vulnerable amongst us in our communities. And we will see more success if we stay the course that we are currently on. I don't believe that we can stay the course because, as you know, Jesse, you're in a position where you probably hear a lot, see a lot, and deal with a lot of political leaders. There's something wrong with most of the people who get into politics. I think they're sociopaths or at least narcissistic so much that they're close to that. And do I think that they're going to have the stones that Trump has shown? No, I don't. And I hope they do, but I don't have faith in it. That's why I'm like, I am 100% supportive of being as aggressive right now as we can be.
Yep.
As aggressive as we can be.
Let's hammer the gas while we have the steering wheel still. Brandon Darby, go. If you're not reading the Cartel Chronicles, you're not getting this stuff all the time until I drag poor Brandon over here with a cup of coffee. Brandon, thank you, brother. As always, I appreciate you so much. Thanks for educating us again. What an ugly state of affairs. I'm completely fascinated by this El Mencho guy who apparently runs Mexico now. So, anyway. We got this email. I wanted to answer this really quickly before we get back to our politics. Jesse, can you explain why and how owning physical gold helps if the market crashes and the dollar becomes worthless? It's not as if I can hack off a piece of it and take it to the grocery store. Her name is Mary. Mary, yes, you can. How do you think people have been buying goods and services since time began, since before there was an America, an England, before there was a Rome, before there was Israel, before there was gold and silver? It's how people bought. It's how people bought things. Precious metals have lasted forever and will last long beyond you. Long after America's gone, they'll be there. Get some physical gold or silver from Gold Co. in your hands. You don't have to go nuts. Get a few coins. Get something to make sure you have some value they can't destroy. Go to jessielikesgold.com. Get some. Call them. 855-817-GOLD. We'll be back.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.